nothing to say about the league either. That's pretty. The Premier League, the league that we do the podcast about.
The world's self-proclaimed world's greatest league. Hey, welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. Nick Webster here. And as always, you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And don't forget, on good old Twitter, at Nick Webster, and you can also tweet away merrily, WSTPod, and that's with a hashtag before it, at World Soccer Talk. I'm joined by the incomparable, the amazing, the voice. Yes, that's what we're going to call him from now on. The voice of soccer on the radio, Nate Aburea. You can find him weeknights 6 to 7, Sports Byline, Sirius XM, and he has fantastic guests, and he talks fantastic football. Nate, welcome to the podcast. I feel honored that you would lower yourself to appear on a podcast now that you have a nationally syndicated radio show.
Well, I got to pay respect to the folks that gave me my start. Like any person who finds a little bit of stardom, you got to pay the respects that are owed to the folks that got you there. And this show is actually the show that in many ways was the biggest step to the big stage. And in last week on World Soccer Talk Radio on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network, it was a week filled with just incredible guests. I mean, from Eric Winalda to just top-notch writers week in, week out. And we had you on, so, you know, you were right there among the top, I have to say. Creme de la creme.
Getting respect is all well and good, but I would prefer money or at least a bottle of booze via FedEx.
We'll see what I can do.
And, of course, no podcast would be complete without the Chardonnay-swilling lover of lovers, Robin Burt.
Greetings, sir. Greetings.
Greetings, sir.
Greetings. What is this, Star Wars?
I mean, really, Bertie, that's the best you can do. Greetings, sir. Greetings. Well, let's get straight into the football action. And I guess we have to start in Manchester, of all places, where Manchester United, and I'm sure this sticks in Nate's craw, are really just simply flying right now on an incredible winning streak. And they were having terrible times against City in the derby games, hadn't won in four, but that is now all swept under the rug. City did open the scoring through Aguero, but United came roaring back to thump four past their noisy neighbours. And now Manuel Pellegrini comes out in the press conference and accepts full responsibility for the defeat. Now, I'm really confused here. How does a manager accept full responsibility when his players were, to be fair, after the Aguero goal and United came back, completely and utterly wank? I mean, City didn't have a clue. They played like a team that has lost their way recently. And you know what? If Liverpool can get a result tomorrow, they put in themselves right back in there, because at the moment, I can't see City actually qualifying for the Champions League next year, Nate.
No, I was actually, that was going to be the first point from a Liverpool supporter perspective, is that you look at if Liverpool beat Newcastle tomorrow, suddenly, oh, your favorite. We've been doing this all year. It's been like a running gag on the show. Liverpool would be 4 points off a Champions League spot all over again, just creeping back into the fold, because that was supposed to be done and dusted in every way, shape, and form. But you're talking about a team that is plummeting. I mean, we haven't gotten a chance to talk about their performance on Monday at Crystal Palace, which was obviously with us doing the pod here on a Sunday, was the final match of last Premier League weekend. So back-to-back showings from this team, in my opinion, you know, the Premier League is something that we hold near and dear to our hearts. And you look over all of the title defenses, the second years after, the year after winning a title. This is, in my opinion, the lamest, tamest, weakest, and most disgraceful title defense in the history of the modern Premier League. And, you know, I'm going to pick with my heart here. And also, just try to stir the pot and create a little interest. If Liverpool beat Newcastle tomorrow, let's make that abundantly clear that they're 4 points off, with their remaining fixtures being West Brom, Hull, QPR, yes, away to Chelsea, Crystal Palace, and Stoke. So apart from that Chelsea match, you're talking about extremely winnable games for Liverpool coming up. And let's not write off the cockroaches on the South Coast that refuse to die, those wonderful Saints at Southampton. And, you know, obviously Tottenham, I'd say, are a little bit out of the question now. But between Southampton and Liverpool, there's still plenty of pressure on City. And I'm hoping they get snaked for fourth place and don't even qualify for the Champions League after winning the title the year prior.
Well, Bertie, Pellegrini says also in his press conference, there are a lot of things that maybe the spirit of the team does not seem the real spirit. I mean, when you've got so many high-priced superstars and when things aren't going your way, you know, that's team spirit. That's when it really comes into play. And we've seen it with Manchester United and we've seen it with Chelsea, that the team spirit within the dressing room is really very, very strong and has got them out of jail on, you know, numerous occasions over the last decade. City, though, on the other hand, it seems like when things start going a little bit south, cracks start appearing a lot quicker in a team of high-priced superstars than in other places.
Yeah, I really don't understand what's going on with City over the last month or, you know, couple of months. I mean, they just seem to have lost some interest in the Premier League. Now, it could be that some of these other teams are playing, you know, obviously a lot better. Games against Crystal Palace, I mean, those are games that, you know, when you go away from home and you're the reigning champions, you've got to win those games. I mean, there's no excuse for that. And as far as having all the possession in that game, they did. They had all of the possession, but that doesn't matter anymore. You know, I mean, we've seen teams dominate games and lose games. So I think the jig is up for him. I think it's only a matter of time, because those owners want results. They want trophies. And under him, I just don't see that happening. I think it's becoming very complacent. He's not getting the best out of his key players. Yaya Toure doesn't seem to be the same player when he came back from the African Cup of Nations. And Sergio Aguero, I mean, if it wasn't for some of his goals, they wouldn't be in any of these games. And so, I don't know. I just think his time is done.
Well, if we could all serenade him together on 3, 2, 3. Sacked in the morning.
You're gonna sacked in the morning. Sacked in the morning.
You're getting sacked in the morning.
That turned very church-like. Talk about Sunday podcast.
What,
my goodness.
Hey, you know, I mean, really, it's knee-jerk, but you know what?
It's not knee-jerk. It's been a whole year. This has been a disaster. He's got to go.
He's like, got to go.
I mean, yeah, I'm afraid
so. You know, he only won the Premier League in his first season last time, you know, and we're going to sack him.
When you compare,
if you're going to sack him, then you know what, your boy's gone as well.
My boy, I love how Brendan Rodgers is my boy. Yeah. I own him. Yeah, thank
That's
you.
That's right. Your boy should go as well. Let's talk about Manchester United. Much was made that, you know, the pundits, and you know, I'm going to have to recognize some of the things they were talking about, but the names Ashley Young, Marouane Fellaini, Juan Mata, Chris Smalling, beginning of the season, those four were absolute Muppet jokers, and now they are being lauded. Fellaini is a player reborn under Louis van Gaal. Ashley Young, incredibly, who has taken so much stick from the Old Trafford faithful, is now knocking on the door of the England squad. Juan Mata, who we saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago, score that wonder goal against Liverpool, just looks in the form of his life. And Chris Smalling, who was perhaps the worst-looking defender United have, now looks very solid in his defensive role and is popping up with great goals. Do we say to Louis van Gaal, wow, you're an absolute genius? Or do we say to Louis van Gaal, you know what, you're a lucky bastard? And talk to me about Falcao and Di Maria, two players you've spent close to 100 million quid on. Robin.
I think it's got it. Well, oh.
Chardonnay tastes very good, and, you know, I love English players. I think they're unfairly treated a lot of time. And, Nate, what did you think about this one?
You prick.
All right, Nigel Pearson.
Van Gaal has spent a ton of money, and we've spoken about this time and time again. He got given the opportunity, he got given the time to sort of experiment, to play with some of his players. I mean, how many players did he play for the first 10, 15 games of the season? It was probably close to like 35 players. So finally, he's getting, you know, a trick out of Young. He's got Mata playing like a world champion again. He's got Di Maria. Granted, he's not getting a lot of playing time at the moment, but he's getting back into the groove. He's got Rooney scoring goals. He's got Fellaini causing all sorts of trouble up there. And the most important part of this team, I think... he's not David Moyes. But, you know, Carrick is the Pirlo of that team. He's the one guy that never seems to get that recognition, even when he plays for England. So the team is finally gelling. I just think it's unfortunate for them. They're on, 65 points. They're a long way off Chelsea. And there's no way they're going to catch up. But, I mean, they're certainly going to finish in that Champions League spot. And that is all they ever wanted from Van Gaal. So as far as this being a successful season, it's been a very successful season for him.
Well, 9 points ahead of Southampton with 6 matches to go. Just a point shy of Arsenal in second place. United definitely in the Champions League. And you know, that was something that we discussed earlier in the season, saying it would be unthinkable for United not to make Champions League places again. And at one point, I think all of us here on the pod said it wasn't going to happen. Well, I think we all have to eat our collective words right now and tip your hat to Manchester United, who are now playing Manchester United football. I mean, it's exhilarating. It's exciting. They're going for it. The atmosphere at Old Trafford has completely changed. And you'd have to put that down to Louis van Gaal, Nate.
Well, I first off want to give a quick shout-out to our old friend that we miss so dearly, the stat man David Mossy, who said in October of this season that Swansea City were going to finish ahead of Manchester United. So credit to you, Stat, for that golden prediction.
Well, that's why he's no longer on the show, and also because he said Burnley were going to be safe. So, stat man, you know what? Stay at Fox. You don't know what you're talking about.
All right, back to this Man United thing before this gets a little too cold-blooded here. I love the throwback, first off, and you two are just going to get your mouths watering at this. It's almost agonizing and hilarious in some ways. But Smalling, Young, Carrick, and Rooney, I mean, a Manchester United outfield backbone of the English national team, it's been a long, long time since we've even, you know, murmured those words. And so the players that you're naming and the resurgences that they're having, and even old crazy Wayne. I mean, even Rooney has just been outstanding during this great run of form for Man United. And as far as Louis van Gaal goes, look, it was only a matter of time before... Just a big cabinet of absolute perfection and every perfect puzzle piece that you had was going to eventually click and come together, and it's finally happening. And if this would have happened, say, a month earlier, and they could have gotten into this just a little bit earlier, we could be talking very easily them closing in on Chelsea. And don't close the book on Di Maria and even Falcao, but especially, in my opinion, especially Di Maria and everything that he's gone through. And we make so many jokes about the personal life and everything, but Birdie, actually, Mr. Compassion, and obviously once, you know, 3 glasses or so have gone down the hatch, you know, he becomes more and more compassionate. And Birdie's talked at length in very beautiful sense about Di Maria and how we should actually show a little bit of patience and sympathy for this Argentinian superstar. Don't close the book on Di Maria as a whole, and don't close the book on his season for Man United. There's still some very meaningful football for United to play and a role that they could play in a potential title race with certain matchups. And so I look for Angel to still do some work for United, and LVG, I'll just call him a lucky bastard, because it's only a matter of time before something like that was going to click.
So United, they do the damage over City, and City in disarray, which was a complete gift for those bastards. That's right. The West London derby, Chelsea against QPR. QPR battled vainly and heroically and stoically and any other Lee you can think of for 88 minutes until Rob Green, he of the Clint Dempsey fumble, circa Rustenburg.
Yes, come on.
World Cup 2010. 2 minutes to go in normal time. Rob Green decides he's going to do a continental, and, you know, listen to these words carefully, continental-type clearance. That's where the goalkeeper side volleys the ball up the field. Well, of course, Rob Green is not continental. He's as English as they come. And what he should have done is put his bloody foot through the ball and sent it to the top of their 18. But no, he goes all continental, wants to do the side volley. Of course, doesn't catch it well. Chelsea snap it up straight away. It finds its way to Hazard. And when it goes to Eden Hazard, well, there's only going to be one outcome. A lovely ball to Cesc Fabregas. Boom. Chelsea, another 3 points, but yet another really poor performance. And you know, help me out here, Nate, because I know you watch far more football than Bertie does, who's, you know, got his neck stuck in a vat of Chardonnay most of the time. But I can't remember the last time I saw Chelsea play well. And I'm really struggling to go back into the time machine. But it's been over a month since I think Chelsea have played well. But yet these Blues under Jose Mourinho, who does say that he thought it was very fortunate for them to get a 3 point out of this, keep on winning.
I'd actually say that it's been well over a month. It's been nearly 2 months. You look at their last Premier League fixtures, and you've got Burnley, West Ham, Southampton, Hull, Stoke, QPR, and these are games that they have not been anything near convincing in. And then you throw in the Champions League downfall to Paris Saint-Germain. And you look at their upcoming fixture against, how perfect is this segue? Next weekend, next Saturday, you got Chelsea against Man United at Stamford Bridge. So you talk about the informed team and the stuttering team. But if you were to ask Jose Mourinho, are you guys stuttering? Jose would look at you and he'd verbally slap you. And he'd be absolutely right, because he's Jose. And he'd say, are we getting 3 points? Is that all that matters? Am I going to win the title? Yes, I am. I am the special one. Shut your ass up. And he'd be absolutely in the right entirely to do that, because luck comes to those who create it. And I know it's such an age-old cliche, but, you know, you as a coach yourself, Nick, know this, that luck comes to those who earn it in this sport that we love so much. And Chelsea have been incredibly lucky. And you talk about two goalkeeping blunders, two absolute goalkeeping mistakes have been worth 4 points in the last 8 days. For the top place team in this league. You go back to the Stoke match where they were completely gifted late on. We joked about a match fixing scandal in that one. So I don't think Rob Green was getting all Italian. You talk about getting all continental. Maybe he got all Italian and was taking a little mafia influence for that one. I don't exactly think so. I think this is just Chelsea getting luck where it's there to be taken, and they've absolutely earned it all year, and they're gonna win the title, and it's gonna be ugly, and it's gonna be really one of the lamest title closing runs in recent history.
Well, you know, they're gonna go post to post. You know, it's gonna be like the Masters for Chelsea. It's a case of Jordan Spieth. You know, they were top from day one, and they're gonna be top at the end of the season. This is what Mourinho said, Robin. I'm obviously very happy with my team because we kept good emotional control. We never lost balance, and we were never really under pressure. We were always very stable. We scored at the crucial point. I do feel sorry for them. I mean, do you buy that? Because, I mean, it looked to me that QPR had the better of the chances. And, you know, if it wasn't for Courtois with a couple of excellent saves, Chelsea could have actually found themselves behind.
Yeah, definitely. Courtois, I thought, he was phenomenal. I mean, it was two great saves, one from Matt Phillips and the other one from, I think it was Charlie Adam. Charlie Austin. Yeah, he had a couple of chances in the second half. But the nice thing about Queen's Park Rangers in that game was that they were really playing a really hard pressing game. And they didn't give Chelsea any time on the ball in that game. So I actually think that Queen's Park Rangers were really unlucky not to get anything out of that, actually. And I think Chelsea only had a couple of chances on goal. They're definitely missing Costa. Having Drogba up top, you know, a 37-year-old. And I don't believe Remy played in the game. So
no, he didn't, after I drafted him in on my fantasy team.
Well done, Skipper.
Nice work. But no, I mean, this is a hard loss for Queen's Park Rangers, because they just could have done with that one point just to get them a little closer to Hull and Sunderland.
One point would have been huge for QPR
to get them above
Burnley on point total, absolutely. And so I just have to throw this out there real quick. I threw out the Man United match being the next one for Chelsea. You're talking about Arsenal the weekend after that. So we're talking about this piss-poor run of form, and I'll throw it right back to you, Robin. Like, Man United and Arsenal, the next two for Chelsea, at home against United in a London derby at the Emirates against Arsenal. Are you looking for Chelsea to just pull a casual 6 points?
Steady on, mate. I'm the bloody host. I'll do the drive,
I got so used to it five days in a row.
Come on. I'll tell you what, Nick. Why don't you answer that question?
Why don't I answer that question? Well, I wasn't even listening.
Well, look, pay attention. The next two games for Chelsea, pay attention. Come on.
Well, no,
Man United and Arsenal. Home to United, away to Arsenal.
We spoke about this last week, and all of us were thinking that, you know, Chelsea are going to stub their toe. Well, had they dropped points here against QPR, had they dropped points against Stoke, I feel like it would have been, you know, twitchy bum time for Chelsea. And we saw that last year. Look, Chelsea had the Premier League. It was in their hands, correct? There's no two ways about it. Chelsea could have won the Premier League title last year, but they threw it away by losing that crazy game to Sunderland when, you know, that they were in the pound seats. Now, could they do it again? Of course they could have done it again, but I think that the chasing pack, i.e. Arsenal and Manchester United, that would have given them that little bit of hope. It would have been like the Masters today. You know, if Spieth had double bogeyed a hole and Rose could have, like, taken advantage, we would have seen a proper competition. But I think the gap is just too far. Right now, Chelsea have that seven-point gap. Their game in hand is against Leicester City. Yes, Leicester City are playing very well right now. But, you know, can we conceivably think Leicester's going to beat Chelsea? No. So you're going to have to say that game in hand is going to be won. So the gap is now going to be 10 points. So even if Arsenal and Man United do us a favour and beat Chelsea, there's still not a race. So, you know, this game was absolutely massive for the chasing pack. And unfortunately for QPR and their coach Chris Ramsey. And this, I want to go to you, Robin. So this is what he said about the goal. He goes, I'm not blaming Rob for the goal, as is, and while I'm doing this quote, I want you to see Chris Ramsey's nose growing. It wasn't one of his best kicks, but we had a long time to defend it properly, and we didn't. When the ball goes out wide and we've got about eight players behind the ball, you can't blame him. It's just a bad clearance.
Yeah, but the ball went straight to Hazard, and so, you know, Hazard does what Hazard does, and, I mean, he takes players on. And, you know, and they saw the opportunity and, you know, they pinged it in and, you know, Fabregas was in the right place at the right time. And it was actually only, I think they only had a couple of shots on goal, Chelsea, you know, during the entire game. So it's just incredibly unlucky.
One shot on target.
Yeah, one shot. So, I mean, but you know what? That's what defines games. It's those, you know, it's those opportunities, whether it's a mistake by the goalkeeper or whether it's actually a really opportunist opportunity by Hazard in the first place. So, look, Chelsea are where they are because of lots of slices of luck. This game has lots of luck in it to, you know, to get to where they are. And they're riding it right now. And the fact that they got a game in hand, they're sitting pretty. But to answer your original question a few minutes ago, no, they haven't been playing well. They haven't been playing well for a long time. And I'm always underwhelmed when I watch Chelsea. And that's why I thought that Queen's Park Rangers were desperately unlucky today, because they bossed that game. And, you know, they just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net.
Did you just say opportunist opportunity?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Classy.
Thank you.
Well, it sets up QPR. They are currently still in 18th place. Had they even got a point, they still would have been in 18th place. They have played more games than most in this tight relegation zone, which is, you know, turning out to be one of the stories of the season. 2 points behind Hull. So lots of work for QPR to do. Let's go on to Saturday. Swansea taking on Everton at the Liberty. 20,468 for a game that kind of feels like, you know, get the deck chairs out. They've got the flip-flops on. But Gary Monk, very unhappy with Aruna Kone, the Everton striker, who he thought should have seen red. Not that it really had a huge effect on the game itself. Swansea punching above their weight as usual. Currently sitting in 8th place, really, when they're a 10th place team. Everton have finally got their rest together after a really dodgy spell, and that's now 4 wins in their last 5. So Roberto Martinez has certainly saved his job for another season. Is there anything really to talk about with this game other than to please the boss, the gaffer, Robin Burt?
Aaron Lennon got a goal for Everton.
Now I got to say that this is going to be Swansea's best ever season in the Premier League. So I think there's something to celebrate there. And the fact that, Martinez is doing what he does, you know, just like he did when he, you know, was managing Wigan. He's managing to pull these out of his arse, you know, the last, you know, part of the season. But no, I mean, both these teams are just sort of going through the motions. I think Swansea are going to finish in probably 8th spot. And I think that'll be a fantastic achievement for them. And they had plenty of chances to win that game, Swansea. It's a great goal by Lennon, his second of the season for Everton. But I don't understand what Coleman was doing when he handled the ball in the box. He basically fumbled, and then he thought, well, okay, so the referee's going to call this for a foul on me. So I'll just scoop the ball. What the hell were you thinking? So, you know, I mean, the fact that they, you know, basically gifted Swansea that is quite something.
Hey, I just got to throw out there, you ask if there's anything of interest here, and you talk about bringing out the deck chairs, you talk about the flip-flops and teams that middle-of-the-road table area where teams, they're not in a relegation fight, they're not competing for European spots or a title. You've already made a couple of golf references and golf analogies, Nick, so I'm going to throw out a baseball one and that age-old thing of playing spoiler late in a season. And I wish that it still had meaning to these players and to these people, and I hope that it does. I hope I'm being pessimistic in thinking that the deck chairs, as you said, are being broken out big time, and how fitting that this match were deck chairs. We're joking about it, and it ends in a 1-1 draw, and both teams sit exactly where they sat 90 minutes prior. But you look at the matches in the final 6 for Swansea, and you've got Leicester, you've got Man City, you've got Arsenal. You look at the final 6 for Everton, you've got Burnley, you've got Villa, you've got Sunderland. So those are meaningful matches to millions of people, and I hope that these two squads, and I'm not just picking on Swansea and Everton, but all of those middle-of-the-road teams, when they're playing against a team in a relegation fight or playing against a team that's competing for a European spot, that they go out and they do put their all out, because playing spoiler is something to actually pride yourself on and can provide a little spark to a late season where there might not be any fire at all. And so I hope that they embrace that the way they should, because those are some big matches. In fact, half of the remaining schedule for both these teams are very meaningful fixtures, and I hope they play them as such.
Oh, I think this is a subtle dig at Major League Soccer. I'm really sensing it, Nate. Meaningful matches, because as we know,
you read into that one a little deeply.
as we know, your favorite Major League Soccer, there are so many meaningful regular season matches, aren't there?
I'm watching a meaningful one right now between my two favorite sides in all of the land, the LA Galaxy and the Seattle Sounders. Exactly.
St. Mary's Stadium, 30,359. Southampton taking on Hull City. Pele, finally. Oh my God, what a drought that was. 81st minute, James Ward-Prowse with a 56th minute penalty, and he's certainly knocking on the England door. We were talking about meaningful games left. Okay, so let's look at Hull City, because even though Hull currently sit in 17th place, 2 points above the drop zone, when we talk about a murderer's row of fixtures, their last 6 games... At the KC Stadium, they will host Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham, and Manchester United, while they have to go on the road to Burnley and Crystal Palace. None of us really had Hull pegged for the drop, but when you look at that fixture list, you got to say that Steve Bruce and Hull are in a whole world of trouble and are perhaps the favourites for the drop. Robin Burt.
They are in mega trouble here. It's funny because you know, I mean, I don't know whether you guys have picked up on this, but they've only won two away games, exactly the same as Queen's Park Rangers. And everybody's been, you know, banging on about Queen's Park Rangers not getting those away wins. It's the same thing that's happened to Hull, and that's why they're in the problem they're in. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a real interesting next seven games, because Queen's Park Rangers, they possibly can pick up a few points. Burnley can certainly pick up a few points. And look at what Leicester have been doing over the last couple of games. They can definitely pick up games. And Leicester have a game in hand on Burnley. They have two games in hand on Queen's Park Rangers. So you can see a flip-flop there. But I think this is a real problem for Bruce. And I'm really surprised, actually. Because, I mean, Hull had a great season last season. They had a good, solid squad. But the one thing that Hull have not been doing of late is scoring goals. And, you know, it sounds really obvious, you know, that you're not going to win games if you don't score goals. But they have several injuries up front, and they've got to find the back of the net. Otherwise, yeah, they are going to be, you know, going down, you know, with the likes of possibly Leicester and Burnley or maybe Queen's Park Rangers.
Bruce says we've got four games out of six at home. We have to win a couple of them. Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham, Manchester United. Who is he talking about, Nate? Obviously, Tottenham seems like a slam dunk because they are just pants right now. You can't see them beating Arsenal or Manchester United. So is he discreetly talking about Liverpool?
If you're to rank them 1 through 4, if you have to do this, you'd say Tottenham 1, Liverpool 2. Those would be the most possible opportunities for wins to actually happen on the road, or even draws to happen on the road, because I don't see them sniffing anything in either of the other two. So yeah, I'd say Tottenham based on their current form and based on the matches that they've played, and teams who are swimming in the same waters, shall we say, as the Tigers in Burnley and Aston Villa. And even you go back even into late March against Leicester, where Leester lost a thriller at White Hart Lane by a score of 4-3. And so you've got Burnley and Villa, who in the last two fixtures for Tottenham, they've picked up 1 point off of, and that was a 0-0 draw against Burnley. So when you look at what they've done against teams that are in the exact same position as Hull and fighting around that drop zone, I'd say that's definitely the biggest opportunity to get it. And yeah, if I had to, I'd say that then Liverpool would be the second biggest opportunity.
This is the World Soccer Talk podcast, and you can follow us on Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And you can also tweet us at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. And you can tweet me at Nick Webster, and you can tweet Nate, and you can tweet Robin, and they'll give you their Twitter handles shortly. Next game, Sunderland versus Crystal Palace. And this one made absolute no sense to me, especially on the back of Sunderland's great win in the Tyne and Wear derby last weekend against Newcastle United, thanks to an amazing goal from Jermaine Defoe. In come Crystal Palace, managed by the man who, if he were a bar of chocolate, would eat himself, Alan Pardew. And right now, Pardew being lauded as a potential manager of the year. 42,073 showed up at Sunderland, although I think that number had dwindled to about 15,000 after about 55 minutes. Connor Wickham getting the lone goal for the Black Cats. Glenn Murray in the 48th minute for Palace. But it was all about Bolasie, Yannick Bolasie. A 11-minute hat-trick. He was quite superb. A couple of the goals were real stunners. Let's talk Sunderland, first of all. How on earth do they go from winning such an emotional game against their biggest rivals to getting absolutely spanked by Crystal Palace? Yes, Crystal Palace have been in fine form under Alan Pardew, but this one seemed to make no sense whatsoever. And it seems to me that Sunderland have no backbone whatsoever, because as soon as they go down by a goal, they just completely pack it in. And now, you know, they're back in that relegation dogfight, because they're only 3 points above that drop zone. They've got some very tricky games coming up. Nate, are we talking about a team and a dressing room that just has a bunch of cowards?
Well, you talk about how is passion supposed to be instilled in a team, and I hate to point all the fingers at the poor fat Dutchman, but when you have a guy from a retirement home in a suit who doesn't know which hand he has his watch on, and his name is Dick Avocado, I don't know how you can possibly be inspired by anyone, and they needed a psycho in there. Sunderland needed a Pardew type, and you look at where Palace was earlier in this year and what that type of manager can do, and it's go down fighting, and that's the disgrace here. And I don't want to call them cowards, you know, but it's getting a little Lion Wizard of Aussie there. There's my sneaky way of doing it. It's really lame, and it's kind of disappointing to see a team go from one of the most emotional victories of the entire season to this performance. And so, no, I think it's really funny of all the things that we just said about Hull and the position that Hull are in. And I know a lot of that had to do with the final six fixtures, the six pack of just nasties coming up for Hull City. But Sunderland are 1 point above Hull on the same amount of matches played. So if we're going to throw all that shtick at Steve Bruce, the manager with the biggest head in the history of English football, I think we have to throw an equal amount at the team that has showed the tiniest bit of backbone of any 20 in the entire league this season. And this was just an absolutely dreadful performance. I hate seeing the mass exodus at their stadium. You know, I mean, I know we have a huge Sunderland contingent that listens to this show. Have a talk with your fans and let them know that is as equally disgraceful. You're calling out the backbone of your side, and you're supposed to be protesting the backbone of your side, and you show it by having even less of a backbone yourselves and leaving 30,000 at a time with a half hour left in a match. Give me a break. Your fans are a disgrace. I hope you go down.
Well, in terms of form, you'd think Sunderland and Hull are going to get leapfrogged by either QPR, Burnley, or Leicester, Bertie.
Yeah, no, I think this is very, very possible. I mean, Sunderland, you know, had a fantastic win against Newcastle last week. So all of us were thinking, that Mr. Avocado is an absolute genius and he's going to turn these boys around. Well, the fact is, they're a poor team. It wasn't Poyet's fault necessarily for you know sort of the place they put themselves in. They drew too many games in the beginning of the season. They didn't win enough games either. And I think you know, you've got to look at the back line. You've got to look at Brown. You've got to look at O'Shea. These are old fellas. And today O'Shea got schooled twice for the third goal and the fourth goal by Bolasie. Sheer speed. It was that physicality that Crystal Palace, you know, they brought that to the game today. They brought a long ball to the game as well. And they just mixed it up with Sunderland. And I'm really surprised that Sunderland just sort of rolled over and, you know, just had their tummies tickled. It was a really poor, gutless performance. And what Nate is saying about the fans leaving, there's one thing to abuse your fans. There's another thing to sort of stay there till the bitter end and maybe give your players grief, but don't just start walking off. I mean, that's just a shameless thing to do. It doesn't matter that you've paid all that money. You should stick in there, maybe do some sort of protest, you know, get some of those A4 pieces of paper and write, you know, out, you know, bloody, it's a farcical situation that I think it's unfortunate because Sunderland are a big club. And they keep flip-flopping between the lower division and the Premier League, and I just don't see anything changing there for them.
Well, it seems that they shouldn't have brought in Dick Avocado, and maybe a certain Mr. Tim Sherwood, who was cock of the walk yesterday after taking Aston Villa to the club that sacked him at the end of last season, Tottenham Hotspur, getting the 1-0 win. Thanks to a certain Christian Benteke, who now can't stop scoring goals. Asked if he enjoyed the victory, Sherwood replied, "Yes, but I didn't enjoy it while it was still going on. If we hadn't won here today, I wouldn't have enjoyed coming back, but it's most satisfying because it's the most important stage of the season." There were so many people saying, "You can't win here, Villa never win here," so it was great. And when you think about that result, that 3 points, absolutely massive, because it's now taken Aston Villa 6 points away from the relegation zone. They are an informed team. They do have one eye on an FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool. Interesting to see who's going to come out on top of that. Will Aston Villa put their full team out, or will Tim Sherwood looked to the Premier League as the most important aspect of their season, but a magnificent win for Villa. Tottenham Hotspur, meanwhile, what a disgrace this team is. I wish Nicky Hollander was around to stick up for his Spurs, because, I mean, right now, I just wonder what is going on with this club. They really fancied themselves to push on and perhaps get a Europa point, Europa League spot, even maybe a Champions League spot, but it's not going to happen. They're now tied on points with Liverpool, who have a game in hand. Tottenham Hotspur, Nate, are you disappointed? Are you surprised? Because quite frankly, I'm not surprised. I think it's typical Tottenham. And like the Sunderland players that I just said in that dressing room, there's a severe lack of backbone. Once again, big lack of backbone at Tottenham.
Well, I think it definitely is typical Tottenham, and I have a bit to say about this match, but I first want to address a picture that surfaced on the Twitter sphere recently this week. You brought up our good friend Nicky Hollander. Did you see the picture of him, his first modeling contract from Norway? This took over the internet back on Wednesday and Thursday. For those of you listeners, loyal listeners of the show that haven't seen it, and fans of Nicky Hollander that haven't seen it, a lot of glitter involved. There are no clothes, there is a guitar, there is angel wings, and a lot of silver, a lot of shiny silver. Did you catch that, Nick?
No, but Nicky advised me never to do something like that again.
Oh, it was actually you. Oh, no, you took the pictures. That's right. Look, as far as Tottenham, it's really a shame because it's been such an interesting kind of three-chapter season for them. They were a joke. We made a mockery of them for the first third. Then it became, whoa, Harry Kane, out of nowhere, go on, this beautiful English story and this glory fairy tale, and let's all gather around the Tottenham campfire and sing Kumbaya, and Pochettino finally has it working, and then it ends. It's ending, and we are all, I think, predicting that it's going to continue to slide down in the same way that it started. And so it's a really bizarre season for Tottenham, and then they're going to finish right there, I think, in seventh place, Spurs and Swansea at 7 and 8. As far as Villa go, a 3-3 draw against QPR midweek where Benteke was just a mastermind and rescued a valuable point for them. And talk about QPR, we didn't even really get to talk about that with Queen's Park Rangers. A tough week for them, you know, basically in a very – it's quite easy to say that they dropped 4 points in extremely unlucky fashion. And when you're talking about 4 points could be the difference in them staying up or going down when you look at the Villa match and you look at the Chelsea match this weekend. But for Villa, that emotional 3-3 draw at home at Villa Park, they go in, they get this one, good for them. And from a Yankee soccer point of view, which I know you love to get into the good old soccer in America, Nick Webster, we had Brad Guzan pitching a shutout for the Villains, and you had DeAndre Yedlin making his debut for Tottenham Hotspur. Obviously, it was not a glorious debut by any means. Played 10 pretty much meaningless minutes at the end with his team trailing by a goal. But he had two Americans in the fold in this one. Credit to them. I'm sure you'll hear all about them on Soccer Morning.
That is Nate Abaraya, host of the World Soccer Talk radio show. Weeknight, 6 to 7, Sports Byline, USA, Sirius XM.
Yeah, enthusiasm.
Done. The Hawthorns, 26,768. West Bromwich Albion taking on Leicester City. And West Brom certainly look like they've got the deck chairs out, the flip-flops on, the suntan lotion to hand, and margaritas with a little umbrella, because they've been on a losing skid. But Leicester City, it doesn't get any more dramatic. Darren Fletcher in the 8th minute. David Nugent came back to tie it up. Craig Gardner made it 2-1. 10 minutes to go. Leicester completely done. They're not going to get anything out of this game. But up steps Robert Huth, the German, to equalize. And then drama, Jamie Vardy in the 91st minute with a winner. Our favorite Nigel Pearson absolutely delighted. The second half performance represented the type of performance we've been putting in for the season. Darren Fletcher, his first goal since November 2012. Is the impossible going to happen? Robin Burr, are Leicester City going to beat the drop? Only two teams have beaten the drop in the Barclays Premier League after being bottom at Christmas. Are Leicester City going to be team number three?
It's possible that the great escape is on. I mean, nobody would have had them winning the last two games. No, when Vardy got the ball on the halfway line, which probably was a foul when he got the ball, I mean, you know, and he ran, you know, the sort of half the length of the field. It was a great left-footed finish in the corner. It's moments like that makes us really, you know, sort of celebrate this. And it was a real ding-dong game against West Brom. I mean,
a ding-dong game?
It was a ding-dong game. Yeah. West Ham, I'm sorry, West Brom had...
Leave your sex life out of it, Rob.
West Brom had plenty of chances to actually put that game away. But you got to give it to Leicester. I mean, they showed real character there. And who knew that Huth could score a goal? You know, Gardner, you know, made it difficult, when they took it 2-1. But credit again to Leicester for coming back twice. They were down twice in that game, and they came back. And the only thing that I really, really miss is those post-interviews with Pearson. And I just want him to see, you know, to go kind of apoplectic. So
he's in a good mood right now, though. He has no reason to go into it.
I mean, where's the fun in that? I mean, where's the fun in the man that we love that loves to get violent with people? So
he's winning.
Well, I know, that's right. But, do I think they're going to get out of this? I think, sadly, they're going to fall maybe 1 or 2 points short at the end of the season. I mean, but the great thing is their last two games, they got Sunderland away and then Queen's Park Rangers at home. So you know it's going to come down to the last game of the
winner
season.
Winner take all classics.
Six pointers, absolutely. And you had in this match, you had Darren Fletcher and Robert Huth scoring goals. I mean, talk about a throwback for the win. And Nick, I know how much you love the Germans, and I know how you always show respect to all of our Scottish listeners and folks around the United Kingdom that are not within the English borders. So credit to Darren Fletcher. I know you love Scottish football. Thank you for throwing that out there. And a little trivia question. For you and the listeners, this one actually kind of just popped in. You said November 2012 was the last time Darren Fletcher scored a Premier League goal. That was, drum roll please, the only goal in the, was it the 6-1 defeat for Man United at home to Manchester City? If I'm not mistaken, that was the only goal in the 6-1 defeat. It was right after they'd gone down to 10 men, and it was one of the goals of the season, actually. And so that was the last time Darren Fletcher scored in the Prem. So thank you for that.
All right, stat man. Leicester currently...
He's gone. I got to live on his legacy. Come on.
Only 3 points behind Hull, but just think, you know, a week ago they were... So far, they weren't even in the 20s in points, but two wins on the bounce have Leicester City dreaming of perhaps Premier League safety. West Ham United against Stoke City. Oh, this one was a toughie, wasn't it, Bertie? 34,946 at Upton Park. Aaron Creswell in the 7th minute. But then Marco Amatovic.
Yeah, sounds good.
Amatovic.
Yeah,
sounds good. The 90,
have a sandwich.
Yeah,
the 95th minute.
Yeah,
basically, last kick of the game. And that, the interesting thing for me from this was the reaction of the West Ham fans. They saw the ball end up in the back of the net, and then they, as one, turned to Sam Allardyce and vented their spleens.
Oh, Jesus.
Sam Allardyce, we talk about dead man walking. There is no doubt about it that Sam Allardyce is no longer, he's not going to be the West Ham manager at the end of the season. He'll probably be sacked the day after the season ends. But this one's definitely a heartbreaker for the Hammers, Bertie.
You know, it's funny because I actually didn't feel really let down when that ball went in the back of the net. I mean, the fact is he also had two goals that were disallowed, one that was disallowed in the 91st minute. The problem was there was 5 minutes of injury time, and all West Ham were doing, they were just holding on. But if you watch the entire game, Stoke, and they're playing away from home here, had 65% of the possession. And I just couldn't believe the fact that West Ham could not hold on to the ball. I mean, they were like a pub team at times. So the fact that West Ham took the lead through Cresswell was a great free kick. It was a great free kick. And it was probably worth the fact that West Ham were in the lead at that stage. The moment that West Ham took the lead, they took the foot off the pedal. And Adam, even he was dominating the midfield for Stoke. Unfortunately for Stoke, you know, they lost Moses in the first half. And so they had to bring on Diouf, and he hit the post. So Stoke had plenty of chances to get back in that game. But I think, you know, as far as dead man walking is concerned, yeah, I mean, Sam Allardyce, unfortunately, he's outstayed his welcome for quite some time now. And I'm not trying to say that West Ham are this big club in the Premier League, but they're getting really, really tired of putting in so many poor performances. If it wasn't for the beginning of the season and that really strong start to the season, West Ham have won so far one in their last 10 games. They've won twice in this whole calendar year. And that's not acceptable. And I look at teams like Crystal Palace, and I look at Everton, and they're right over West Ham's shoulder. I could easily see Crystal Palace pushing on above West Ham. And, you know, West Ham's season might peter out to 11th or 12th place. You know, Stoke played well. I give them credit for that. And so, yeah, but as far as Allardyce is concerned, yeah, his days are numbered.
Saving the best to last. Turf Moor, 20,615. Burnley 0, Arsenal 1. Aaron Ramsey in the 12th minute. 8 straight Premier League victories for the in-form team. Arsenal leaving it a little bit too late, but they are now in second place, 7 points behind Chelsea. They do actually play Chelsea, so a little bit of a 6-pointer there. Arsenal actually didn't play, I don't think they played particularly well, but did enough. And that's kind of like, not really an Arsenal performance, Nate. You know, we get so used to watching Arsenal do more than enough to win games. We don't see them winning those tough 1-0 squeakers. Has Arsene Wenger stumbled upon something?
Well, I think it's ironic. We complain about it with other teams and how, oh, well, they really, you know, they backed into that scoreline. Oh, they really backed into success there. And then with Arsenal, we have this thing of we always throw at them that they're unable to win the cold, gritty matches in the north of the country on a bitter spring day. They're unable to win in the rain in December and throw out the lack of backbone for the Gunners. And so I think it's time for us to do what's right here and say, well, hey, they won a tough match against a team that presses. I love Birdie and you guys break down tactics quite a bit and talk about the concept of a team pressing high up. There's no team that presses higher and puts more pressure than Burnley in the entire league. It's nasty. It's innovative the way that Dyche has had them playing of late and their little run of form or whatever you want to call it. And this is a team that has a grit to them. And yeah, they're in 19th place, but they've got their own little mojo going. And Arsenal went in and won a tough, gritty match, 1-0. Credit to them. Got the goal early. I watched this thing in its entirety, and it was a trying process to watch this entire thing. This was not a pretty game. This was not what Arsenal have exhibited over this 8-match run. This 8-match run, which, by the way, is the longest Arsenal win streak since 2004. The Invincibles season. That's incredible just to put that in perspective. And I joke about that with you, Nick, all the time and my own Arsenal-loving father. That did you ever imagine after that Invincibles season that would be the last time that Arsenal would ever win the Premier League? Well, there you go.
Would ever win the Premier League.
You like how I snuck that in there?
Yeah, I thought it was very, very clever. And that's why Nate Abaraya is the host of the World Soccer Talk Radio weeknights at 6-7, Sports Byline, Sirius XM. How'd you like that?
Nice plug.
Boom, boom.
Love it.
Bertie, put a bow on this weekend, will you, mate?
Palace. I really like Palace, and I'm so impressed by what Pardew has done, and I love the fact that he left Newcastle because he was unappreciated, because he thought he was a charlatan, and he's just proving everybody wrong. And it's great to see a team that's just flying out the gates, having fun, which some of those lower team, you know, aren't able to express themselves like that. So, but the fight down the bottom, that's always exciting, and it will be exciting all the way to the bitter end.
Nate, I'm going to welcome you now to Butler Cabin to put the green jacket on you and your thoughts of the weekend.
Well, I can't believe I won the Masters. Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Liverpool will beat Newcastle by a score of 4-1. That's what I'm saying for tomorrow's fixture at Anfield. Liverpool will then be 4 points behind Manchester City, and I want you to get at all of us on Twitter and at World Soccer Talk and let us know, because I think that's actually far more compelling than this title race that we're kind of trying to act as if there's still a title race. Nick wants to just squash the title race. All right, it's a far-fetched idea that Arsenal or Man United could catch Chelsea. Man City in fourth place with Liverpool potentially on 57 and Southampton on 56. I want you to tell us if Man City are going to finish in fourth or if the Saints or the Reds are going to creep up. Thank you to everybody for the initial success here of World Soccer Talk Radio on Sports Byline, and I hope we can keep it up, talking a lot of USA Mexico this upcoming week with that big one on Wednesday in San Antonio. So tune in every weeknight at 6. Thank you so much, Nick, for the shameless plugs all show here.
All show long. And for me, the Manchester Derby, seeing Manchester United back to their thrilling best, nauseating, but at the same time secretly exciting. You know, it was so much fun kicking them while they were down, and it's kind of annoying seeing them come back. I'm hoping that this form is fleeting, and it certainly won't carry over to next year, because I much prefer United chasing teams at the top of the table rather than sitting at the top of the table. But you know, I have to take my hat off to them for some wonderful football. And then for Yannick Bolasie with, as Robin says, a stunning hat-trick. Great stuff. And finally, Tim Sherwood going to White Hart Lane and sticking both middle fingers right up at old Mr. The chairman, whose name has just quickly popped out.
Levy.
Yes, Daniel Levy. I bet Sherwood must have been absolutely loving it. We will be back next weekend with the finest podcast this side of the Mississippi. Get us on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod, and you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. For Nate Aborea, Robin Bird, I am Nick Webster. We'll see you all next week.
Come on, you Irons, I've had a couple of bottles. Great escape. Do, 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 do. I'm hammered, I'm Robin Bird.
Come on, my beloved Hammers.